So this was a preview for the upcoming series, sermon series that we're starting today called the Advent series. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Advent, Advent started sometime in the 4th century, and it was meant to celebrate the 4 weeks that were leading up to the birth of Christ. The word Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, which means the coming. And so even as we see in the word Adventus, the roots of this word Advent, we see some sort of anticipation, that there's a connotation of anticipation even in the word itself. And so as we go into the series of Advent, I want to talk about two different women. And the two different women are Elizabeth and Mary. And so we're going to go into this passage in Luke chapter 1. So we're going to start with verse 5. It says, "In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abiha. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron." Now, this is extremely, extremely significant because back then, when people introduced people or they was introduced in the Bible, we generally get some type of history about their family background. We get some type of information about their family background. So you generally see somebody introduced as so-and-so, son of so-and-so, or we see that they're division of this clan or this descendants of this family. And so Elizabeth and Zechariah being a descendant of the Abiha tribe is extremely significant because that means that Abiha tribe, their identity is placed in what descendants and what tribe that they came from. Now in today's modern society, that might not be as significant, mainly because we tend to build our identity on resumes. We build our identity on how much success that we have or how much achievements that we've achieved, right? But back then, that was pretty much the sum total. That was your identity. That was your resume. And so if you had an interview back then, if there were such a thing as job interviews back then, I mean, they would probably be very short. You would walk into a job interview and say, "Well, have a seat." You sit down, they sit down and say, "Well, why should we hire you?" And you would say, "Well, because I'm David, son of Sam." And he'd be like, "Okay, well, we have your number. Thank you for coming." And that would be it. That's all they would want to hear. Now, for Elizabeth and Zechariah to descend from the Abiha tribe in 1 Chronicles was said to have been the chosen tribe or the chosen group, one of the 24 descendants of Aaron that were allowed to go into the temple. And so make no mistake about it, they are considered elite class of that society. But they do have a problem, and we're going to continue on with the passage. It says, "Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all of the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old." And in fact, later in the passage, it says that people said that it was impossible for Elizabeth to conceive at this point. Now, in today's world, I mean, it doesn't mean as much, right? Back then, that was pretty much the purpose of what women did. That was a woman's purpose, to have children. If you ask women what they did back then, they had children, right? That was their sum total of their purpose. Nowadays, women work, women go to school. More women go to school than men. Women stay home and watch the Kardashians. I mean, there's tons of stuff for women to do. Back then, this was it. They just gave birth, and that was it. And so for Elizabeth to not be able to give birth, right, and at the same time, for her to be a celebrity status and have this scrutiny and be a member of this elite company put tremendous amount of pressure, to the point where Elizabeth later describes it as a disgrace that she's not able to have a child. Now, what Elizabeth is seeking is not really that much different from what we seek many times, which is validation from society and validation from men. For those of you who know that at one point I did enter into law school, and I remember my third year, law school was kind of a funny place because random stuff would happen. And in my third year, I remember this first year girl comes up to me. I was in my final year, and she comes up to me and she says, "I'm so excited for you, David. Aren't you so excited? I'm just so excited for you." Right? And I thought she meant because I was going to graduate soon and leave this miserable place, right? So I was like, okay, I couldn't get with that. So I was like, yeah, I'm pretty excited. And she said, "Pretty soon, David, you're going to sign your name with the ESQ next to it, right?" And for those of you that don't know, an ESQ is kind of like the equivalent of, like, you know, doctors, they sign the name and put an MD, like a lawyer would sign the name. and put it ESQ, right? I did it because I want to show people how self-important I am. But anyway, so I would do it. And I remember just like, okay, and just weird stuff before you get to that point of getting that ESQ, because you have to go through graduation. And graduation is kind of like nobody's really happy at a law school graduation because you have a bar exam coming up and you're just like, it's on the back of your mind, right? So you go through the bar exam. And I remember just, it was just a bizarre law school bar exam. The amount of pressure that people put on themselves during this time period where they're studying for the bar exam is tremendous. And I remember, like, I was just being in the cafeteria and with my best friend in law school, and he would just freak out in the middle of studying. He was like, Dave, I can't do this! And he would just freak out. And I remember, like, just weird stuff. I walked in one time, and I saw a guy throwing up in a garbage can. I mean, it was like scene of an exorcist or something. I mean, it was just really random. I was like, what's going on? Just random people just freaking out. I remember I had this girl come up to me, and she was very well known in the law school because she was like the toughest girl in law school. In fact, her favorite line was always, I don't care what nobody think about me, right? She was this like tough Asian girl. And every time people would say stuff to her, she'd be like, I don't care what nobody think about me, right? So she comes up to me and she asked me for a ride, and I said yes, because I was scared, right? So I end up giving her a ride, and it's just really awkward. It's like, I'm thinking of what to say. What do I say? So I'm like, okay, say the first thing that comes to your mind. Say first thing, because it's just awkward silence. So I was like, who do you think was better, Michael or Prince, right? It was just really awkward. It's the first thing that came to my mind, right? And she embraces it. Thank goodness. So we just start talking, and yeah, I'm like, yeah, Billie Jean, Purple Rain, you know, it's comparable, right? So we're going on, and in the middle of our conversation, she just starts bawling. Starts going, just like full all-out bawling. And I'm not making fun of the fact that she's crying, because if you ever heard my previous sermons, I encourage crying. I think crying is a good thing. I think we should all cry more often. But you know, it was just nothing prepared me for that moment. It was just so out of the blue. It was just so random. It was probably one of the most random moments in my life. And she's bawling. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I'm about to freak out. And then she somehow, I don't know why, I cannot make this up. She opens my glove compartment, takes out the box of Altoids that's in there, opens it up and like grabs a fistful and puts it into her mouth, right? And like, till this day, I don't know how she knew the Altoids were in the glove compartment. And why would you open the glove compartment? What is she looking for, a map? Like, really, like what are you looking for? And so she does that, and I freak out, right? So I pull over to the side of the road, and she's like, Dave, I'm gonna fail! She's bawling, I'm gonna fail! And there's only one thing you could say to somebody in that situation. I want you to know there's only one thing you could ever say to somebody in this particular situation, and it has helped zero people in the history of mankind, right? She's going, I'm gonna fail! And I'm like, well, if you fail, you could take it again. That line has helped nobody ever. Nobody has ever been consoled by that line, right? And she looks at me and goes, David, you idiot! You idiot! She goes, if I fail, people will have known that I failed. And that's embarrassing. And what I realized in that moment is this girl who claimed that she doesn't care what anybody thinks about her cares so much what people think about her. And what I realized is that no matter how much we convince ourselves that we're not made for validation, we are made for validation. In fact, we crave validation. You see, what sin does is that when sin entered into the world, we were meant to have 100% unconditional validation from God the Father in heaven. And when sin entered into the world, that split us, our relationship got split, and we started seeking validation from other things. And that's exactly the reason why no matter how much achievements, no matter how much success, no matter how much power, no matter how much money we have, it somehow feels like there's something more, that we need something more, that it doesn't fulfill enough, that we crave for more. And that's the reason why, because we were not meant to be validated by those things and validated by society and validated by man. We were meant to be validated by the unconditional love of a father. And so what Elizabeth's doing is not that much different than what we do on a daily basis, many of us. But what eventually happens with Elizabeth is very significant. She does get validated, if we go on to the next passage. It says, but the angel of the Lord said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Zechariah is the husband of Elizabeth. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. Now, this is very significant because, like I said before, our family was everything back then. So for them to say that you're not only going to have a child, but your child's going to be great, by extension meant that she was going to be great. That's what this news was. So if we could just go over this one more time. Elizabeth wasn't able to fulfill her life purpose, and it was impossible. She was in her old age, but now she's hearing the news that even in her impossible old age, she's going to be able to fulfill her life purpose. She's going to stamp herself as an elite member of society. She's going to get rid of all that scrutiny, and not only will she be great, she's going to be great for generations to come through her lineage. And this seems like it cannot get any better. This seems like almost there is no validation that goes beyond this. But then we come to a story of another girl named Mary. Now, Mary is younger than Elizabeth, much younger. Mary is not of elite status. Mary is related to Elizabeth, but through marriage, not by blood. Mary is not a direct descendant of the Biha tribe, so Mary does not have the elite blood descendant in her blood. So Mary is of less status than Elizabeth. Make no mistake about that. On top of that, Mary is a virgin at this point. Mary does not know whether she can have a child or not. So just the news of Mary having a child in itself should not have been a bigger deal than Elizabeth. But let's take a look at what happens with Mary. The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." Even Elizabeth, your relative, who is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive, is in her sixth month. "For no word from God will ever fail. I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. May your word to me be fulfilled. Then the angel left her. At that time, Mary got ready and hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea, where she entered Zechariah's home and greeted Elizabeth. So Mary hears this news, and she gets so excited that she travels to the hill country of Judea. Now, it says that Elizabeth is 6 months pregnant at this point, and then later on it says Mary stays there for 3 more months. Now, knowing how long it takes a woman to give birth, right? Mary stays for 3 months until Elizabeth gives birth. Now, knowing how long it takes a woman to give birth, that means Mary must have gotten there in a span of days. So when the Bible says she hurried, it meant she must have really hurried. And to give you guys an idea, Mary traveled to Elizabeth 100 miles. Judea was 100 miles from where she was in a span of days. Now, there's been debate over whether she actually traveled by foot or by donkey. But nonetheless, she traveled from New York to Philadelphia in a span of days. And it was just news that she could not contain. She needed to tell somebody. And she was just so excited. And I don't know if you ever heard news that just excited you so much that you needed to tell somebody. You know, in my early 20s, I got a phone call at 12:30 at night. And I remember I was sleeping or getting ready to sleep. I was in my bed, and I got a call. And it was from a guy who, he was 3 years younger than me. He was a freshman when I was a senior in college. So he was just figuring out, I was teaching him about basketball. And I would tell him about all the basketball stuff that I witnessed, you know, throughout my childhood. And he would get all his basketball information from me. I remember he calls me at 12:30 at night, and I'm kind of annoyed at this point, and he calls me. I'm like, "Oh, what do you want, man?" He's like, "Dude, are you ready for this, man?" I was like, yeah, what's up? He's like, "Dude, remember when you told me that Michael Jordan scored 69 points in a game one time?" I said, yeah, against the Cleveland Cavaliers, I remember that game. He goes, "Dude, remember when you told me that David Robinson once dropped 71 points in a game?" I was like, yeah, last game of the regular season, he was a scoring title champion, yeah. 81, bro! 81, Kobe Bryant scored 81 points. I remember I jumped out of my bed. I said, "What? 81 points? You gotta be kidding me, man." I remember I went on the internet. No way, there's no way he dropped 81 points. I looked on the internet. Lo and behold, he drops 81 points. I said, I gotta go. I hang up the phone, pick up the phone, call my brother. My brother's like lying there. I was like, hey, Chris, remember when we were kids and we saw Michael Jordan score 69 points in one game, man? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, I was like, remember when we dropped, David Robinson scored 71 points? He's like, yeah. 81 points, bro, 81. Kobe Bryant just dropped 81 points. He's like, what? He gets up, he tells his friend, and we go on and on. I mean, it was just, news was just so exciting because we were witnessing history. This was a moment that we could tell people forever where we were when we witnessed or we heard Kobe Bryant score 81 points in a single game. Now, I've thought about this. I'm kind of weird, so I thought about this whole Mary scenario, right? And it's just, it's bizarre because I don't think I can think of news that would get me so excited that I would run 100 miles in a span of days, right? Like, I mean, even when my child was born, I found out I was going to have a child, like, that was exciting, but, I mean, people can wait, man, for real. Like, 100 miles in a span of days? Like, I'm not going to travel 100 miles in a span of days, right? And she just goes 100 miles in a span of days. She must tell somebody this news. She could not contain it, and she goes to the hill country of Judea, of all places. So she's going up and down a hill all the way to tell this news. It's just, it's madness. Pregnant woman. Going up and down a hill and tell people in a span of days. It's crazy. And so this is Elizabeth's reaction when Mary gets there. If we go to the next passage, it says, when Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. In a loud voice, she exclaimed, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you bear. To continue on. But why am I so favored that the mother of my Lord should come to me? As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy. Blessed is she who believed that the Lord will fulfill his promises to her. Now, this is very interesting because by society standards, once again, Elizabeth is more elite. Elizabeth is older. Elizabeth, it was impossible for her to give birth. The news that Elizabeth was going to give birth should have been a bigger deal. But as soon as Mary comes in, as soon as news reaches her ear of her greeting, the baby leaps in her womb, and all of a sudden Elizabeth is filled, and Elizabeth all of a sudden gets more excited for Mary's news than her own news. And this is the big deal now. It's Mary's news that's the big deal. And I thought about that. How could that be? If Elizabeth reached the highest potential, if she has the highest potential that she could ever reach, and she has this elite status of validation in society, how is Mary's news bigger than her news? And what I realized is Elizabeth knew something. She knew that this isn't just a validation of one person. This isn't just a temporary validation of herself. This is the validation of all of mankind. She knew that this news of a child being born was going to lead to a child growing up, living a perfect life that we should have lived, dying a death we should have died, resurrecting from his tomb. And he was going to validate us for all of eternity, conquer death, so that no longer will we have to seek our validation from man. No longer will we have to seek our validation from schools. No longer will we have to seek our validation from workplace. No longer will we have to seek it from power, money, success, achievements. But God the Father will have freely given it to us. This is bigger than any news, any validation that the world could possibly give us. And so I remember... You know, my brother's friend DVR'd that game where Kobe Bryant scored 81 points. Thank God, right? So we go over the next day. We're so excited. My gosh. Even though we know how this is going to end, we're so excited because we're about to witness history. We turn it on. We get the chairs reclined, popcorn out, turn it on. First quarter, Kobe Bryant scores 14 points, which is pretty good. That's pretty good for NBA standards. But we're like, yeah, not bad, right? Second quarter, he scores 12 points. By halftime, we're shaking with anticipation. Because we know that we're going to witness one half of a game where Kobe Bryant is going to drop 55 points in a single game. Now, if you ever watch basketball, dropping at 55 points in an entire game is considered like a historic achievement. But this guy's going to do it in one half of a game. I remember we were just shaking with anticipation as we were watching this game. Like, my gosh, we're about to witness history. We're about to witness something amazing. So the question is this. Why do we celebrate Advent? Why do we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ? Is it just to celebrate the birth? Or is it because we know how the story is going to end? Is it because we know that this baby is going to grow up and live a perfect life, die the death that we should have died, resurrect and conquer death? And we are now going to be on the other side of that. That we will be on the other side of his validation, that the victory has already been won, that there's nothing for us to be afraid of, that God the Father has already fulfilled his promise. And as we celebrate the Advent season, as we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, what we're actually doing is watching our salvation and validation story unfold right before our eyes. If we close our eyes and bow our heads in prayer.